The program committee asked me to introduce this guy, Gary Tim. They told me in this little piece of paper that most of you know who he is, and he knows a lot about EAS. Seriously, Gary and I have been had been colleagues at Journal Broadcast for 32 years, and it was a privilege working with him. Gary has been a member of the Society of Broadcast Engineers and Broadcast Engineer at Journal Broadcast Group for the past 36 years. He's been broadcast chair of the Wisconsin EAS Committee for the past 16 years, as well as Wisconsin chair for the past 28 years. Gary's involvement in EAS at the national level includes his membership on the SBE EAS Committee and on FEMA working groups. He is a facilitator of the EAS CAP industry group. Gary was awarded a certificate of commendation for his work on EAS and Amber Alert by the governor of the state of Wisconsin in 2005. Gary, good to see you again.
All righty, let's see here. The topics I'll be talking about today, I just wanted to touch a little bit on our new SBE Google Groups for those that aren't aware of those, and I'll have a couple slides on that. I also have handouts up here, so I'll have the addresses up there to subscribe, but rather than writing 50 miles an hour, you can just grab one of these from me if you want. There are also copies of this at the SBE table in the other room. And then moving on to CAP, what is CAP? Why do we need it? Why are broadcasters dealing with FEMA? What are the, where are we with the 180-day clock? What must broadcasters purchase? And what are FEMA's long-range goals? Again, we were having some problems, as other SBE chapters around the country were, with broadcast.net for our list servers. So we have moved those to Google Groups. That's been working real well for all three of our lists. These carry not only EAS information, but also chapter information, chapter meetings. Some of the chapters use them to distribute the newsletter. So again, if you haven't moved your subscription over to the Google Groups, be sure and do that. You have to do it yourself mechanically. We can't sign you up from the old list. And again, these are the addresses. So from the email account that you want to subscribe to the list, send an email from that account to, for instance, the sbe-wi+subscribe@googlegroups.com. You'll get an email back. You click the link in that email. It'll take you to a page that says you're subscribed. These lists have been very reliable. They do attachments. And in fact, there's a little more to them than just the email list itself. This is the homepage for Madison's SBE Chapter 24. If you missed a message, want to go back, you deleted it and want to reread it, or you want to see all the messages in a particular string, you can go to that list's homepage on Google Groups, and rather than all the messages just being there one after the other, unrelated to each other, each one of those blue links you see there is a thread. So you click on the subject line of the email you're looking for, and then all the messages in that thread will come up one after another, and it'll make it easier for you to find things. Any attachments will be on that particular email. You can probably kind of read the address there, but if you just go to googlegroups.com and do it in their search box, just search for Madison SBE, Milwaukee SBE, or Wisconsin SBE, it will find its way to the homepage for each one of those. So CAP, the Common Alerting Protocol, what is it? And I apologize for people that have been through this before, but just a quick primer for people that are being exposed to this for the first time. CAP is a worldwide standard format for issuing alerts. CAP is a text message with the ability to attach audio and visual elements. And just a reminder that the current EAS is not going away. CAP will just be a new delivery method for the current EAS plus additional content. what does a cap message look like? And again, it's nothing but a text message. We're kind of scared. What is this cap thing, and what do I need to know about it? It's an XML message, so it's basically just a text message, a fancy email if you want to make it a simple explanation, and each piece of information is on a specific line within that text document, which is what makes it a world standard. So you'll notice as you read down there, for instance, on the first indent there, you see child alert. So this would be an amber alert. And then below that, there's another little indent where you see same. So rather than using EAS, they're using the same nomenclature as they use in weather radio. Under that, you'll see our event code, CAE. The description in there is there for the amber alert. Down at the very bottom, you'll see same again. That would be the EAS FIPS code, 006037 would be the FIPS code. So the EAS information is scattered throughout the CAP alert in specific locations. So an information such as and a decoder such as Jim Gorman's that he has on display over in the hall there knows which line to look at to pull a particular information out to make an EAS alert out of it. Now, CAP is a worldwide standard not just for EAS, but for other devices. It's going to be feeding, and I'll get to in a few slides, an interoperability summit that I went to out in Baltimore 2 weeks ago now, where there were CAP-enabled devices that were feeding sirens and doing desktop pop-ups and all manner of devices that are all taking their information out of this CAP alert, cell phones. Those devices would be looking at different lines within the CAP alert. So perhaps a cell phone would be just looking at what's called event, and it would just pull out child abduction and use that for what it puts on a cell phone, or you might want to use that for the subject line of an email, and then put the description part down in the body. So each user of a CAP message can pull out of it what they need because they know what line within that CAP message it's going to find its information. And again, I say users, but these are all computers, so the software knows which line to look at to pull out the information its particular device is looking for. The advantages of CAP, it will carry the information conveyed in a current EAS alert plus much more. It can carry audio, graphics, maps, and text all in one alert. And it's the same format, no matter who issues it, so therefore a worldwide standard, and no matter what device is trying to read it. So again, a U.S. CAP message can be read in Japan because they know where the information is going to be found. More advantages of CAP can be used not only for EAS, but alerting methods such as cellular phones, personal alerting devices, which would be like for the hearing impaired, websites, billboards. It's a text message with attachments, which can be distributed in a variety of means for EAS, internet, satellite, DTV data, wireless. And the great part for emergency managers is that they can issue just one alert to communicate with numerous devices, making it much simpler for them, one software package to deal with, and it takes care of everything they want to alert, do their alert on. Oops. The advantages for broadcasters, TV stations will have a text output of the audio message, so they no longer will be limited to the generic EAS crawl that we've been living with all these years. TV stations will get things like disaster maps and the direction the plume is moving, that sort of thing. Radio stations will get a hard copy rather than trying to write it down by playing back the message off the speaker. In addition to embedded audio files, most manufacturers intend to include a text-to-speech converter. Again, if you want to hear what one of those sounds like, Jim Gorman has that running on his sample machine over in his booth over in the exhibit hall. And it's along the lines of what you hear on weather radio as well. This is the Emergency Interoperability Summit that I attended out in Baltimore. And again, this is a hotel conference room about the same size as this one, with vendors of CAP-enabled devices all the way around the outside of the room. Down in the lower left there, the vendor MyState USA originated a CAP alert, and it didn't just go on a cable across the floor to each vendor. It actually went out there within my arrow there. It went out on the Open Platform for Emergency Networks, which is FEMA's backbone for emergency alerting that HazCollect uses and other alerting services. Went out to that network, came back, and hit each of those devices. So there was a little lag time, about a minute or so after MyState USA sent their alert. Okay. All of these devices started popping up all the way around the room. Upper left there is a desktop pop-up. So that's just a normal computer desktop that you're working at in your office. That pops up with a little outline there of the evacuation area. To the right of that, it's popping up on a screen. Below the screen there, you can see a siren. And lower left of that is a Sage NDEC. That black box next to the siren is actually the CAP receiver. This is a system that's actually being used in the state of Hawaii. And their CAP decoders feed all those devices by pulling the CAP off and then feeding it to whatever device needs to receive the alert. To the right of that is a cell phone. The cell phone technology that's being used for EAS alerting is called cell broadcast. It is not an SMS text message. Cell broadcast is a special broadcast that goes out on a separate channel to cell phones. It does not need to know your phone number. It doesn't need to know what your home area is, if you're home, if you're roaming. Because it's not SMS, it doesn't need to know your phone number. It blasts the message out once on the cell broadcast channel, and any phone that's been enabled to receive that will immediately display the message. So it'll go out to any phone in that cellular tower's range. So it's a way of geotargeting alerts to just that area and all the cell sites within the affected area. But it also has the advantage of not trying to, doesn't clog up the system with SMS messages, and obviously would need to know your phone number and the like. So this cellular broadcast technology is something new that we actually are doing a pilot program with cellular broadcast up in the Appleton area with Einstein Cable, with Einstein Cellular, rather. And that's a program that's been ongoing for a couple years now, and that's one of the few test beds in the country. To the left of that is a sign with circulating LEDs going off in the message, and to the left of that is an emergency manager's program with a little better representation of the evacuation area. Again, all of this running off a one CAP message, each device pulling out of the CAP message what it needs, throwing away what it doesn't need. So I think we're all aware that FEMA is getting involved in EAS, and it's a little something different for us. Of why are we dealing with FEMA all of a sudden? Back in 2006, there was a presidential executive order that declared that the Secretary of Homeland Security shall administer the EAS as a critical component of the public alert and warning system. So FEMA has a more active role in EAS, and much in the FCC EAS CAP rules depends on policies to be established by FEMA. How is FEMA involved in EAS? EAS is now part of IPAWS, which is the Integrated Public Alert and Warning System, which is FEMA's program to put all emergency alerting under one umbrella. IPAWS uses CAP to deliver alerts to all devices and systems. And again, they're looking at incorporating the cellular phones and whatever other alerting devices that they can talk to. What is FEMA's vision for IPAWS? This is their overall architecture that FEMA is envisioning how IPAWS will work. They will be taking messages from the federal, state, and local level, aggregating those within the IPAWS system with distributed servers, and the servers will then be serving the messages out to all the things that are under the IPAWS umbrella. So you get the emergency alert system, digital EAS, cellular broadcast that I was just talking about with cell phones, internet services, NOAA, and on down to the distribution to the state and local systems, reverse 911 sirens, signage systems. So this is what IPAWS, how they envision the system to work end to end. Let's make sure I'm not missing a slide here. So their vision for state and local connectivity, and again, the FEMA's mission originally started off as distributing messages for the president. In January of this year, they got a new director of that office who reread the president's executive order and decided that they should really be including state and local connectivity as well, which only makes sense because we all know that's where most messages come from anyway. So they came up with a new vision statement, and their origination vision is for FEMA IPAWS to aggregate appropriate CAP messages from authorized officials in federal, state, local, territorial, and tribal jurisdictions via an IP service. And the dissemination vision is to deliver CAP messages to broadcasters in federal, state, local, territorial, and tribal jurisdictions via an IP service. You notice there's a couple questions down there, and this, as I have across the top written there, this is a slide from one of FEMA's presentations, as was the previous one on architecture. So again, these are actual slides that FEMA has used in their presentations to communicate to us how they see EAS fitting into their IPAWS vision. You'll notice at the bottom there's a couple questions. What connectivity they should be delivering to the states to get these CAP alerts down to our level so that we can use them? What form of connectivity do we want from FEMA? These are good signs to see in their PowerPoint presentations and in their talks with us. And we have WebEx sessions and conference calls. They're constantly asking us, what do you want? What do you want us to build? They're very engaged with us as taking our input as to what we feel we need, as opposed to them setting up a system and saying, here, now try to make it work. So I have to really credit FEMA and their effort and their way they're going about it, taking our input and taking our ideas and forming their system around what we have to say. I won't go through this slide, there's a lot on here, but again, this is some of FEMA's ideas on distributing things. So they're talking about internet, lease lines, satellite communications, equating that to the government systems that are already in place that they may be able to leverage. Below the table there, you'll notice that when they talk about originators, they're talking about bringing the origination system all the way down to local EOCs, 3,500 input nodes. And good to see at the bottom there that not only are they disseminating to state and local EOCs, but they're talking about distributing right down to all 30,000 broadcasters. So again, this gives you a feel for how far they're talking about actually building messages down into the state and local level, right down to broadcasters. At the bottom there, their initial way that they're talking about distributing these messages is VPN on the DM Open Backbone, which is, again, the network that was used at that interoperability summit and which is also currently also being used by HazCollect. The infamous 180-day clock was in the 2007 FCC report and order. The deal with the 180-day clock, within 180 days after the adoption of CAP by FEMA, stations will be required to accept alerts in CAP format. In addition, CAP messages received from your state governor must be rebroadcast. That's a must carry, just like the president. The governor can be doing their state-level alerts or could be doing geo-targeted local alerts. Stations would also be responsible to receive any new and next-generation EAS networks, and those would be networks that are initiated by FEMA that they say, this is a network you are to use. We would then have to avail ourselves of those networks. What kind of progress is FEMA making so far towards CAP? Obviously, the first step is to get equipment ready so we have something to install in our plants. Their current progress on equipment testing, the IPAWS CAP profile, outlining the technical requirements for EASCAP has been approved. FEMA recently awarded the contract to a lab which will be performing conformance testing on the vendor's EASCAP gear and the equipment meeting the IPAWSCAP profile requirements will be placed on a web-based qualified products list. So that is where we will be able to find out what products we know if we buy it, it will be compatible with FEMA's system. Again, this is a website that isn't yet up. They are just starting talking to the lab this month, so the testing is just starting to be getting going there, so the website won't be up for a while yet. This slide I primarily put up to look at the bottom part of it. The top part there, you'll notice they're talking about the IPAWS profile, and the last bullet in the top part there is estimated OASIS profile completion August, September. That is done, and that is the piece that had to be done before they could start equipment testing. But in the bottom there, you'll notice that there are four bullets there, and what they're saying at the end of that is FEMA's adoption of CAP. So these are the four things that FEMA has set for itself as milestones before it will roll that 180-day clock. Those being standing up an IPAWS conformance lab and begin testing, which is just getting into this month. Develop a CAP to EAS implementation guide for CAP to EAS translation, which they're also just starting at this particular point, which will say how you take EAS back out of the CAP message. Demonstrating delivery of the federal message in the CAP profile to the national PEP stations. And they propose and start OASIS process of CAP security requirements. So they have at least set these as milestones before they would roll the clock. Just because all four of these conditions have been met, they won't automatically start the clock, is how they're characterizing it. But these four things have to at least be met before they would roll it. So again, it's good to see that they have milestones and they have an idea of how they want to approach this. This is our timeline, and I won't get real deep into all these timelines, but at least shows you again, they have a vision for where they're going. They realize a lot of things have to be done in parallel. All the way down at the bottom there in the middle, they show January 2010 as FEMA adopts CAP. That's actually been slid down, and their current target now is August of 2010 for adopting CAP, which would be the time that the clock rolls. So you can see that things are kind of sliding down there a little bit. I think things will continue to move a little bit, but this is kind of a snapshot of their current view. But you can see that things there, they're really not anticipating that the FCC is going to finish their rulemaking till calendar year 2011. So they do have a timeline set out here, and this isn't necessarily set in stone what you see here. They are changing things on a basis as things get done or don't get done. And really in their defense, things like the OASIS process trying to get the profile done, that was something that's happening out of house, so they can't really control the timeline on that and have to react to how OASIS got the profile done. OASIS is a standard setting organization that took on the CAP profile to codify that. Likewise, the testing lab, they don't really have a lot of sway over as well, so they're going to have to really react to how the testing goes to know where they can place some of these other bullets on the timeline here. So how soon might the 180-day clock roll? FEMA's original target was January 2010. Their latest best guess, and that's FEMA's language out of their latest WebEx session, is August 2010. It would appear really to me from looking at the timeline we just looked at that maybe January 2011 might be a more reasonable target. There have been talks in one of our WebEx sessions, suggestion that from one of our FEMA working groups to make the deadline January 1st of 2012, which is the same as CMAS, which is the cellular alerting deadline, which would mean the clock roll would be mid-2011. So I guess I would have to say for the all-important question that everybody wants to know, FEMA hasn't set a deadline yet, and it looks like it won't be any earlier than 2010. And that's about as close as I can get at this point. So if you're looking to do budgeting, you know, I would probably be looking at mid-2010, maybe late 2010, just as a place to put it in your budget. So once you do have to buy equipment, what are the choices? There's basically two choices for the gear that you're going to have to buy. You either buy a new integrated CAP Plus EAS unit to replace your current EAS unit. And CAP Plus EAS is just kind of my nomenclature. And what I mean is one new unit that does both CAP and EAS in one box. And again, you're going to have to take CAP in one end, send EAS out the other end, because as we stated early on, CAP is not going away. We're still going to be doing rap, rap, rap on the air once CAP is here. I'm anticipating that once it's there, after a couple years, the FCC will see fit to do away with the EAS on-air codes, but there needs to be a transition period. So these boxes you're buying are taking in CAP, outputting EAS, but that's not to say that that unit can't also, out of another port, send the actual text message to scroll on your TV station that has the actual message in it, so, and display evacuation maps and things that are within the CAP message. Just because you have to do the old-fashioned EAS doesn't mean you can't add CAP content out of the other side of that box. So again, although CAP needs to exist, the box is going to have more information there, and you're going to be able to use that. So the new box does both CAP and EAS in one box. Or you can keep your current EAS unit and buy a new CAP to EAS converter, which receives the CAP messages, turns them into EAS, and then feeds that to your current EAS unit. My one personal note here, if you're thinking of going that route, be sure to ask if the converter you're buying can communicate to your current EAS unit the must-carry status of a CAP message received from the governor. What I mean there is, as we talked early on, a CAP message that comes in from the governor is going to be must-carry if it comes in as a CAP message. If the CAP to EAS converter is a separate device, how does the CAP converter over here say, I got a message from the governor, and tell your old EAS unit you have to carry this, as opposed to getting a message from authority that's not the governor? So there needs to be some communication there, whoever's making a converter, to talk to an EAS box that is not the same vendor. Is that possible? So I would ask that question before buying a separate box. Obviously, you may need to buy equipment to receive those next generation EAS networks if they're adopted by FEMA. So should I beat the Russian? Buy now. Unless your legacy EAS unit dies and you have no choice, you may benefit from waiting for the FEMA qualified products list to come out to pick the unit that best meets your needs. If you are an early adopter, or if your unit does fail, the EAS Plus CAP units that are currently available are all software-based, as are most of the CAP to EAS converters. So they should have no problem in upgrading to any FEMA IPAWS CAP tweaks that they would do between now and when the testing is actually done. But, you know, obviously you should want to get that in writing that they can update their software to whatever it is FEMA settles on once the testing is all done. The range of current units that are out there right now, and there are about three of each of these categories, the EAS Plus CAP units are in the price range of about $2,500 to $3,000. And again, this is MSRP, so you're going to be able to do better than this, you know, just by going to your vendor. CAP to EAS converters are in the range of $2,000 to $2,500. So you see, you don't really save much money by going with a converter. And also, you got to keep in mind that the EAS unit that you currently have installed is getting old. But those are all judgments, you know, for you to make on your own. I am aware that there are units in both those categories that are going to be targeting a price range below both the price ranges I show there. The units that I'm aware of that are shooting for that are not yet approved for sale. So as I say, you might want to keep your eye out for equipment to come out as we get closer to the clock roll, and you may find things that are more cost effective, but that's what's out there right now. In Wisconsin, as far as our planning in Wisconsin, the state EAS committee is going to have to deal with developing a new cap delivery network. Part of what we're kind of waiting to see now is that we're not sure what FEMA's intended network is going to be. And as you saw, they're talking about getting as extensive as getting all the way down to the broadcaster level. So before we spend too much time building a network that they're going to come along and build a parallel network of, we're kind of trying to get a feel for what FEMA is going to build. We're also looking at assisting the governor with cap capability. In Wisconsin, we're pretty far down that road already. The required monthly test that is originated by Wisconsin Emergency Management at 11:50 p.m. every other night is currently authored in cap format. It's delivered to ECB in cap, and at that point, there is a cap to EAS converter, which converts it to cap and sends it on the normal network so that it's in EAS when it gets to your box. So we are already authoring some messages in the cap format in Wisconsin. Cap alerts in a state will not happen until an FCC-approved state EAS plan exists to distribute those cap alerts. So again, we'll have to have a network set up and the EAS committee submit a revised plan before things like mandatory governor alerts would be in effect. So that's all a ways down the road yet.
Okay.
These are some of the other IPAWS updates that are from the latest WebEx sessions and PowerPoints, kind of some of the things I picked out that FEMA's talking about doing. FEMA expects to deliver cap messages to the PEP stations by January 2010. They're planning the first ever nationwide EAN test by the end of fiscal year 2010. Should be quite exciting. they're adding, we've been trying to get them to do that for, you know, how long now? You know, it's not really a system unless you test it. And, you know, they've been hesitant, but they finally committed to doing one by the end of 2010. They're adding 38 new PEP stations, and that, again, is the primary entry point stations, which is the network of stations that would be the primary distribution of the president's message. And there will be a total, then, of 74 PEP stations for 90% coverage of the country. That's to be done by October 2011. And this is a quote from them. They are on schedule to achieve their IPAWS vision for fiscal year 2012, which to me means they anticipate that that IPAWS program will be done by 2012. This slide I threw in there just to kind of give you an idea of what they're doing with training. We've been kind of hyping on them that we need training not only at our end, but at the emergency manager's end so that they are kind of up to speed on cap messaging and writing good alerts. FEMA is partnering with the FEMA NIMS program, which is the National Incident Management System, which all levels of government, from the volunteer fire department all the way up to state emergency management, are required to participate in. So they're working with that wide-ranging FEMA group to develop and offer alert and warning training for message originators, so our emergency management people all the way down to the local county level and city level. Coordinating with other FEMA and DHS partners to incorporate public alert and warning procedures into state and local emergency communications planning and documentation. And this is, again, to have them incorporate EAS as part of their response plan at the local, county, or city EOC, so it's on their roadmap that we should be included as part of their alerting thought process. And FEMA IPAWS establishing a relationship with the FEMA Emergency Management Institute to develop training for EAS. And again, EMI is the federal office that writes the tests for the NIMS program, and that all kind of wraps in together and makes sure that the training is going to be getting to emergency management. Testing there at the bottom isn't anything too specific, but I primarily wanted to talk about the training there. That about does it for me. Resources here, CAP information. If you're looking for CAP information, the definitive source on CAP is incident.com/CAP, which is a website run by Art Botterell, who all of us familiar with CAP like to call the father of CAP. That XML format was his idea, and he got it ushered through OASIS. And anything you want to know about the implementation of CAP and how it works, it can be found on his website. IPAWS has its own website, the FEMA.gov/emergencies/IPAWS, and that gives you a good overview of what IPAWS is thinking of doing in their whole world, the progress they're making on their various projects, and where they are with that. If you want to look at some CAP alerts in action, National Weather Service is doing a beta website where they have CAP alerts up that you can take a look at. And that's at weather.gov/alerts-beta, kind of a long title there. At the end of the year, that site's going to be up and running and done with its testing. And I believe at that point it's going to be called alerts.weather.gov. And I'll pop a message out on that once they're up and operational. But again, that would give you some idea, again, of if you want to see CAP alerts in action and kind of what they look like and how they equate to an alert itself. My email is at the bottom there if you want to get a hold of me. And at this point, we can take questions.
First of all, I find it coincidental that CAP is going to be due to be rolled out in 2012 at the end of the Mayan calendar. and I just want to know if it's true that the movie is being sponsored by FEMA.
I cannot speak officially for FEMA.
Gary, two things. You mentioned that there would be a requirement to connect to the FEMA Next Gen network when they determine what that is. Does that mean, in your opinion, that each station is going to have to make that connection, or is there going to have? Will it suffice to have a connection to your operational area in EAS?
Yeah, and you know, we're not really totally certain what FEMA is going to do with this. They don't like to call it a network. They like to call it an IP service for whatever reason. What they're going to do with their IP service, as you saw on the node slide, they're talking about having it come down to each individual broadcaster. Now, whether that means, you know, they're going to come into our place and leave a RJ45 hanging, or, you know, if it's going to be up to us to at some point connect to some hub somewhere, we really don't know at this point, and that's why as a state EAS committee, we're trying to get a feel for how far down are you coming? Are you going to dump it at the county EOC level and we got to connect from there, at the state EOC level? So that there has to be some interaction there between the state EAS committee to figure out and relate that information to individual stations of what that connectivity is going to look like and how much effort on our part there's going to be to connect to that. And again, when they say that we're required to connect to that network, I think the commission more was talking there, you know, maybe if it's a satellite network or something on that form. What FEMA's talking about doing is IP, and the obvious IP transport's the internet, but we're certainly hoping they go above and beyond that. But I don't see it being anything all that fancy that, you know, is over and above IP that we're used to dealing with already.
The next question is for those that would choose to keep their legacy equipment. There really is no way in some of these units to create another must-carry message unless it's in the form of a must-carry code. Are they contemplating adding codes to the EAS system to accommodate the governor's message?
Yeah, the thing that would have been nice, and notice I made this big distinction about if you buy a CAP to EAS decoder, make sure it can convey the governor's must carry status to your legacy box, which knows nothing about the governor. The governor's not special. What do you mean? Well, yes, it is. It's a new thing. Well, I don't know anything about that. So if the commission would have in their report and order very easily taken care of that by creating an originator code called GOV, that, you know, you could have told your legacy box, well, now GOV means the same thing as the prez. When you get that, you got to do it. Well, the commission didn't do that. And from the latest I've heard, when we ask FEMA, and really we're having all these WebEx sessions with FEMA and not the commission, FEMA's statements about the FCC is that the FCC feels that all the rules that are needed to launch CAP are already in place as part of the RNO, and they're not planning on doing any rulemaking before EAS CAP launches. They realize changes will be needed after the fact to bring things in order with whatever FEMA's implementing, but they don't intend on doing rule changes before EAS CAP is launched. So, you know, once EAS CAP is launched, you go back then and try to create another originator code. At that point, you've kind of lost the whole reason for doing it. So unfortunately, it doesn't sound like the commission is open to changing the rules at this point to make that happen. So it was kind of an oversight on their part, but they're, because of this executive order, they've kind of handed everything off to FEMA, and they're kind of trying to let FEMA do the whole thing.
How will this impact the current designation of some stations being SR, LP1, LP2s, when these messages are going out, you know, where cell phones, pop-ups on people's computers, will that have any impact?
As far as changing those station designations, you mean?
Well, yeah, I mean, will there still be a need for SR stations like there is now?
Yeah, we sure hope not for long. You know, working at an LP station, I mean, you know, they do it as a public service. It comes with the territory, but when can we stop doing this? You know, it's cramping our style. And really, you know, the goal here is to deliver the EAS alert directly to every broadcaster right from this IP delivery service, directly to every broadcaster. That's the goal. That's what we want to have happen. At that point, there is no reason to have this daisy chain LP1, SR, you know, y'all got to listen to this one because it's the only place you can hear the governor. I mean, yeah, that's where we want to be headed. And hopefully, as I say, within whatever, a couple years after CAP launches, the FCC will feel comfortable with, okay, everybody's getting the message by CAP now. There's no reason to have LPs and SRs because there's no reason for people to listen to them anymore. And at that point, really, then you do away with the brap, brap, brap on the air, because really, that was only meant to convey the EAS digital information from station to station. If you're no longer doing that, there's no reason for on-the-air EAS codes either. So yeah, I'm hoping within a couple of years that's all going to kind of go away.
Gary, of the five originator codes, we agree that the governor's going to use CIV. Now, if this is an urgent message and not a political speech, isn't he going to issue some kind of a warning that conforms to 149 in the table of optional events? What's he going to use for the event code? It's got to be some kind of a warning.
Well, the way I have my box programmed now, because DHS and FEMA have said that they're going to be using codes like EVI for evacuation and things like that. In the Wisconsin state plan, there's, I don't know, what are there, half a dozen codes that we recommend that everyone program for automatic forwarding. So it may be that the code that the governor uses may be one of those that we're recommending that stations program as an auto forward. So he may get auto forwarded just by default because of the event code he uses. I guess the problem you run into is, if I don't really like EAS, all I want to do is what I'm required to do. I'm only going to forward the monthly, forward the president, and I only want to forward the governor because that's what's required. How can I set my equipment up to only forward the governor when I don't know what event code he's going to use.
Well,
there's no control, you know, there's no way to predict.
Well, I always ship the units to forward all of the warnings. Now, many of the warnings in the table are never going to occur in Wisconsin, tsunami, earthquake, and so on. So that if the governor has an urgent message and he uses a warning code with a CIV originated code, it'll go out on one of my boxes with all of the warnings going out, okay? Mm-hmm. And I also think that you've overestimated the price of a CAPTA EAS decoder.
As I say, I'm aware that there are units out there that are shooting for a lower price point,
yes.
And I would recommend if you can wait, you probably should wait because a better mousetrap may come along, you know,
right.
If you buy too early.
Well, the obvious question, is NTIA or any of the other agencies looking at doing any sort of grant program for this?
Oh, money?
Yeah,
you want the money?
Buck Rogers.
Within the last few months, I've become aware that a lot of states, a lot of state emergency management agencies are applying for Homeland Security funding to do EAS CAP with. Washington State's been doing it for quite a while. Idaho is just starting it now. The state of Missouri used Homeland Security funds. And they're not only building out the networks, but in some of those states, they're actually buying the EAS boxes for some or all of the broadcasters in the state. So now that is up to the state emergency management, how they want to use their Homeland Security funds. So that's a possibility. I mean, NASBA, the National Alliance of State Broadcast Associations, has been working on funding with Congress and with some of the people that they lobby to try to get federal funding to blanket coverage for this unfunded mandate of boxes that we have to buy, but of course they're running into a hard sell with Congress to give money to for-profit businesses to buy equipment. So I mean, there are some places that are already using federal funding if the state agencies elect to do that, and there are some efforts within the broadcast community to try to get that going, but there's nothing in the near future that I see that's going to come riding in on the white horse at this point.
Sure. You made the comment about that eliminate the famous barack, 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 or the old EBS system with the dual tones. And how do you do an emergency alert so people would know if you didn't use some kind of identifier such as that? Is it going to be something else, or, you know, you kind of said it eliminate it? Well, then how would you know?
Yeah, there's no way to know what the commission's going to do down the road. You'll notice when they went from EBS to EAS, they still kept what they called the attention signal, the old EBS, and the EAS rule specifically said it's there as an attention signal to get the public's attention because that's what they're used to hearing. So, yeah, I could see them still requiring that we use 8 seconds of EBS tone just to wake the public up because that's what they're used to hearing. But it's no longer on-air signaling, it's just to wake the public up. But yeah, the on-air presentation hasn't really been defined yet. There are working groups within yet another committee I'm on, the EAS CAP Roadmap Coordinating Committee, which has a number of working groups. So one of those is the presentation working group. What should this look like? We've got all this rich content of evacuation maps and much more detailed text. Do we try to present that in a uniform fashion so it looks the same no matter what station you're looking on, or when it's up here, when it's down there, when it's in a box? I mean, is there an advantage to uniformity? Is there an advantage to uniformity of the warning signal, as you're talking about? In Australia, they have what they call the alert a warning signal or some nomenclature, but they use that same sound is on a broadcast station. It's the same sound that a cell phone emits. It's the same sound that your desktop program makes. Same sound no matter where it's coming from. Again, that uniformity of training the public to listen for, oh, that's the noise. So yeah, I agree, some kind of, you know, universal alerting noise would need to be incorporated.
Gary, maybe the tone that should be used is the inrush noise on the start of the broadcasts that are sometimes done. I'm not sure where they're originating from, but they make a certain special noise for quite a while.
The big gaps at the beginning of some of the messages?
Yes.
Those primarily are coming from National Weather Service, and they basically have a problem with the program that is issued to them by Weather Service headquarters, and it's the same across the country. There's a delay there that the system won't let them start recording when they issue the required monthly test. You notice there's this 3-4 seconds of nothing. I work with Rusty and got them to try to start earlier. Well, I don't know if you recall about 6 months ago, one of their monthlies had the front end cut off. So they tried to start talking before the little light came on, and it wouldn't accept the audio. So that dead air at the beginning and end of the monthlies coming from Weather Service is built into their system. It's not them being dumb or lazy. They're aware of it, and all they can do is pass it up the chain to Washington, and their answers are working on the improved version of their program, and they'll have that ready in whatever, you know, a couple of years. And incidentally, the improved program that they're doing for weather radio, the Weather Radio Improvement Program, or RIP, is going to allow CAP messages to come in and go directly onto weather radio. The fact that we can't do either EAS alerts or CAP messages directly to weather radio is the reason that AMBER alerts are not sent on weather radio. Because all they can do is take written text and change it into an EAS alert, which they then put their timestamp on. Well, if we got their alert floating around, plus the one from the state, we got two different times and two different alerts. When they get down the road in a couple of years that they improve their system where they can take CAP directly in, we'll be able to feed them a CAP alert, and they'll be able to participate more fully in local alerting, AMBER alerts and things, where they can take CAP alerts directly in and preserve that issue time so EAS will still be able to detect that as a duplicate. So there's improvements coming at NWS as well. And their improvements, I think, are targeted for like 2012.
I just have one quick follow-up question on what you had just mentioned about the text to audio conversion. I noticed on the latest AMBER alert on my local cable that they displayed the crawl and the alert on the screen, but there was no accompanying audio with it. Is that maybe the reason why?
They should both be there unless they got a problem.
Okay.
I just happen to think, let's say one station buys the new unit and carries the CAP codes directly through as issued, and another one buys a converter, and if they don't come up with a specific code for the governor, won't we have problems being down the line where instead of now we get a duplicate message and only one is aired, won't both of those end up airing since they won't be duplicate messages anymore?
They will be duplicate messages because the issue time and all the information is pulled out of the CAP alert. So.
Oh, I see.
They will be duplicates. I mean, if the commission would come up with a special originator code, that would be part of the CAP alert as well. So it's the information's always derived from the CAP alert. I think we're right on time. I guess we're
Very good. Thank you, Gary.
All righty. Thank you.